So thank you for tuning in today. You are listening to the Community Action League show. The Community Action League is a collaborative effort of local organizations and nonprofits. Our goal is to raise awareness of issues that impact people in Gallatin County and discuss the organizations that listeners can engage with that are relevant to those topics. On our show, we discuss the intersectionality or connections between topics at the local, national, and global levels. We encourage cooperation in community organization, information sharing, and create a connected service network to best serve and educate individuals in our community and beyond. You can tune in to learn more about topics like consent, housing, transportation, human rights, addiction, and more. And today, we're actually going to talk about disabilities in the workplace. So October is Disabilities Awareness Month. It's Disabilities Employment Awareness Month. And we recognize the skills and abilities of one of America's largest populations. So in this time of low unemployment rates, everyone needs to work, but more importantly, everyone has the right to work. So I'd like to introduce the folks that are here to chat with us today. First of all, we have Katrina Fife from Beacon Employment Service and the Gallatin Mental Health. And we have Cindy Smith from the Montana Independent Living Project and Michelle Latonde, who is a workforce consultant at Job Services of Bozeman. All right, so Michelle, can you paint a picture for us? What does this population look like?
Well, first, the definition of disability, and I hate the word disability.
I've heard you say that before.
For those of us who do have a disability, the Titanic was disabled. It broke in half and it sunk. Mm-hmm. Those of us who have disabilities wake up every morning just like you do, face the day just like we did yesterday, go to bed just like we did yesterday. So we call ourselves diversely abled, okay, or a diverse ability. And the definition of a diverse ability is that you have one or more challenges to daily living. And in that case, many, many more of us are diversely abled than you think we are.
Does that include things like mental health disorders?
Oh, yes.
Okay, just anything that can interfere with your daily life.
With your daily living needs, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a broad definition of disabilities, but I think something that people don't necessarily consider is that a disability or a diverse ability can be temporary. It's not necessarily permanent. And so in that respect, we are all one event away from being a person with a diverse ability.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good point, because several years ago I had a car accident and I broke my femur and it took me several months to relearn to walk, and it definitely impacted my daily life, especially because it was the middle of winter and my car had a tendency to get stuck in the snow. But and I never thought about that as a temporary disability, but absolutely, I think most people have probably had that at some point in their life, if not a permanent one.
And if you are somebody who hasn't had a temporary or a permanent diverse ability, you will age into that. Mm-hmm. So at some point, everybody, if they live to be 50 or above, is going to experience what it's like to have a disability.
And you all know some famous people who have had disabilities. Do you want to tell us about who those people are?
Sure. So I just made wrote down a couple names that I thought were easily recognizable. And I think the first person that I wanted to talk about was Marlee Matlin. I think most people know who she is. And she is deaf, and she's managed to be a successful author as well as actress. And I'm sure that's only a small portion of what she actually does. And then another person is Stephen Hawking, who had ALS. And then I think it's pretty recognizable, too, that FDR, who was the President of the United States, had polio. And so if a person with a diverse ability can be President of the United States, what can't they do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and going along with FDR, Winston Churchill had bipolar. So he actually had numerous periods of depression and suicidal intention. And he called these his black dog. And so... he would talk about when his black dog became docile, and then he would go into an episode of mania where he would work all night and got a lot of stuff done. So
he used that.
Those
mania.
World War II diverse abilities really worked in our favor. Martin Luther, the reformer, also struggled with depression. He was the one who nailed the 95 Theses on the door of the Catholic Church and started Protestantism. Oh my. Anyways, and he called his, he had several names for his depression. He called it melancholy, heaviness, dejection of spirit, downcast, sad, downhearted. So these are definitely things that were reflected in his work.
And is that something that we see a lot, is people kind of nicknaming their diverse ability in some way?
I think that there's a lot of people who have diverse abilities and they don't identify as being disabled.
Okay.
So disabled is like a broke down car on the side of the road, right?
The Titanic.
Yes. Yeah. And people with disabilities do and accomplish many things, many amazing things. So I think there's a stigma attached to identifying as a person with a disability because people associate some kind of negative connotation to that. When in reality, a lot of people have disabilities, but it doesn't make them disabled.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as far as people who identify that way, you can't throw a stone without hitting a person. Maybe that's a bad analogy. but without hitting a person with a disability, they might just not identify that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and back during Abraham Lincoln's time, he had depression.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know that when I have depressive episodes, I call it going down the rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, people have phrases that they used, especially back 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, my grandfather, for instance, who was not a famous person, but he was epileptic.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was growing up, they put him in the attic because the demons were coming back,
mm-hmm.
which gets back to what Cindy was talking about. Lack of education causes fear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why programs like this are so important, is because people can start to learn more about what these diverse abilities are and recognize them more frequently and hopefully help to break down some of that stigma. Definitely, if we don't talk about things and people aren't educated on it, they aren't, that stigma is going to continue to remain. So. And this is definitely not an issue that we just see here in the Gallatin Valley, is it? It's a nationwide issue?
1 out of 5 Americans have a disability.
Like currently or will in their lifetime?
Currently. Mm-hmm. This is the workers. These are people between 16 and 65
mm-hmm.
who could be working. And of course, as Cindy referred, that number is increasing with us baby boomers. There are 7.9 million Americans who have a disability and are working.
That's 8 times the population of our state. You know that, right?
Right. But there's also another 1.5, which is just about the population of Montana, with a disability who are unemployed and are looking for work.
Mm.
Now, the sad thing about workers with disabilities or diverse abilities is people seem to think that they can be housekeepers, dishwashers, janitors,
mm-hmm.
cleaners, and personal care aides. And those jobs typically pay low wages in the first place,
mm-hmm.
but they pay even lower if you have a diverse ability. In fact, people with a disability are about 50% more likely to earn less than $15,000 gross a year compared to people with no disability.
And do you have any sense of why that might be?
It goes back to the reason that we're talking about it today. It's perception.
Mm-hmm.
It's fear that those of us with disabilities are going to break on your watch.
Mm.
I think, too, when people hear the word disability, they really focus on what they can't do rather than their strengths. So I think that's a really common mistake.
And I think also people assume what your abilities are when in reality they really don't know. Instead of having a conversation with an individual, they just assume and kind of pigeonhole what they can and can't do. Can you imagine if somebody assumed what Stephen Hawking's abilities were? So I think that a lot of time you're put into positions where you can't necessarily live up to your potential because people don't expect it from you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes that translates into pay as well. And it's ironic too because it's not less expensive for people with disabilities to live.
Oh, no.
So they're making less money, but it's not like they get a discount on life. So it's a really unfortunate.
Absolutely. And do we want to talk a little bit about mental health statistics specifically about folks that have diverse abilities of mental health types?
Definitely. So 2 out of 3 people with a severe mental illness want to work, but less than 15% of them have jobs currently. And then not only that, but follow-up studies have shown that people with severe mental illness who are working compared to those who are out of the labor market have an average savings of $16,000 a year in mental health costs, which definitely saves us, you know, as a community, in addition to being inclusive, you know, saves money. Studies have shown that people who obtain competitive employment have an increased income, which makes sense, improved self-esteem and improved quality of life and reduced mental health symptoms. And I mean, that's the same for people across the board, whether you have a disability or not. With income and self-esteem. We see work as part of a recovery rather than the end goal of a treatment. Recovery from a mental illness is possible, but it's unique to every person.
And what does recovery look like? What does that mean exactly from a mental health illness?
So there's a couple of definitions for recovery in mental illness. So some are grounded in medical and clinical views. But then recovery could also be understood in the context of community and successful living.
So it's like learning to live with the mental illness
mm-hmm.
successfully. It's not necessarily like you stop being depressed. Is that correct?
Right, yep. It's sort of like alcoholism where mm-hmm. you're in recovery, but you always have that with you.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely people can experience a lot less symptoms, but it never necessarily goes away. And then I guess the other part of recovery too is that there's not like this, it's not an event, it's a process. So it's ongoing throughout a person's life.
The local unemployment rate in Gallatin Park County is 2%.
Well, and I feel like I remember, because I studied economics in my undergrad, I feel like 3% is what is generally considered structural unemployment, like what you would expect to see at least in any...
3 to 4%.
3 to 4, yeah. And so 2% is lower than that.
Very
because it's not
low.
Just people who are like, I'm going to go look for a better job. It's literally saturated the market.
Yes.
Almost, yeah.
Well, and it's expected to dip even below 2%. So what that means is in Gallatin County, of the people who are 16 years old to 65, who are able to work and looking for work, we have about 1,300 available people
mm-hmm.
who are not working.
Mm-hmm.
In Park County, they have less than 300 people.
Mm-hmm. In the county,
in
not just in Livingston,
whole county,
for example. Yeah.
That are available to work who are not working right now. And this labor shortage is expected to last up to 2025.
Mm-hmm.
So we need everybody working
mm-hmm.
who can and are available.
Well, you work for Job Services, correct, Michelle?
Mm-hmm.
And so these folks that are available, are they looking for jobs at all different levels, or mostly entry level, or is it varied?
It is varied. We have people coming in with engineering degrees,
mm-hmm.
law degrees, teaching degrees, and we have people just trying to enter the job market from the beginning. So mm-hmm. it's all levels.
And do you see a diversity in the employers that are looking to hire?
Yes.
As well?
We've had legal positions, accounting positions, management positions. Mm-hmm. And employers come to us and say, well, people just don't want to work. Mm-hmm. Well, we all live here.
Yeah.
You have to work or you're going to starve.
Yeah.
It isn't that people are too lazy. It's that we've done a fine job in this state of exporting our youth for years and our middle class. That there's nobody here.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about the state, these unemployment rates, that's not statewide. That's just this general area, or are they pretty low across the state as well?
Well, it's about 3.9
elsewhere
across the state.
Okay.
Higher in reservations, by the way.
Yes.
12-13%.
Well, and there are fewer opportunities there as well, is that correct?
Yeah. Transportation is a big issue at that point also.
Mm-hmm. Which is an added issue if a person already has a disability that, for example, doesn't allow them to drive, or
right.
something like that. Absolutely. So I feel like I've heard you all talk about accommodations before. Do you want to tell us what an accommodation is and how it works?
Well, first of all, you don't have to disclose you have a disability.
Okay.
Unless you need an accommodation. When I applied for job service, they didn't know I had MS
mm-hmm.
or depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I have it fairly well under control. I shake a lot, but other than that, so I never disclosed because I didn't need an accommodation. And we all know that the Americans with Disabilities Act requires that employers must provide accommodations. But the word accommodation scares employers. They think, oh, good, no matter what your disability is, they think that they have to install an $8,000 wheelchair ramp. The word I use when I work with job seekers with all diverse abilities is I use the word enhancement. This will enhance my ability to be a successful employee for you. And then I have them list about 5 things that generally those enhancements cost less than
$50. $50 for all that's needed?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and can you tell us a little bit about that? So if an employer is going to provide one of these enhancements, is that something that they work through with the employee, or is that something that the employee knows in advance, or the potential employee knows in advance would be helpful to them? I don't know if that makes sense, but when you think about something like you're talking about, well, you didn't need an enhancement, but if we're thinking of a person that just needs, well, do you have an example?
Well, it could be someone with a learning disability.
Okay.
I work with an extremely successful gentleman. If you give him a pad and a pencil so he can write down what you want him to do first, what you want him to do second, and he also needs to be shown how to do something. So these types of enhancements don't cost anything.
And he knows in advance exactly how to be successful at a position.
He's been coached.
Yeah.
To ask for it.
Okay. And do you help people identify what some of those enhancements are sometimes as part of your job?
Yes, we have some resources that we'll be discussing a little bit.
I love it. I like to get ahead of myself. fantastic. Well, Cindy, I think you know something about the benefits of hiring someone with a disability. Do you want to tell us about that?
I do, because I think a lot of times when we talk about accommodations and talk about people with disabilities working, that the employer kind of might think about the negatives to that, and when really there's a lot of benefits. Mm-hmm. So just starting off, I think the fact that we have such a low unemployment rate and so many employers are looking for employees, there's a whole workforce of people out there who really want to work. So it just benefits you as far as recruitment to make simple accommodations and to hire people with disabilities. And then also statistically, people with disabilities have a higher rate of loyalty and you experience reduced turnover. So that's always a benefit.
And I can't remember the statistics on it, but I've definitely read about what a huge toll turnover takes on the profitability of any company or organization, because it takes time to learn a new job, and not just a couple of weeks. I mean, you can kind of do what you need to do after a month or two, but it takes a year or two to hit a groove and get going with it. And if you have employees constantly turning over, that's a problem.
Yes, and it takes time and money to recruit and train. And yeah, so I think that's a huge benefit, especially if you're a place that has a high turnover. You want somebody, you want to, as an employer, invest in somebody that's going to be around for a long period of time. Also, Michelle kind of mentioned earlier that there is this whole group of older individuals that now have to be in the workforce. I think that retirement as we used to know it doesn't necessarily exist. And so people are having to work later and longer in life because of things like health insurance and different benefits like that. And so there's this whole workforce of older people who actually use less sick days. They express more loyalty, we kind of talked about that, and they meet or exceed job expectations. And so having somebody who is an older employee comes with a lot of benefits, possible tax benefits. So that's another good thing for employers. Anybody with a disability, you can get, as an employer, you can get tax benefits.
Okay.
So it's not age-based. And also, people with diverse cognitive abilities have a tendency to think outside the box. And I think for an employer, that's a really valuable skill to have. And then we have a lot of vets who are coming back and entering the workforce. And so there's a lot of benefits that employers can get from hiring vets. And they come with these skills of leadership and teamwork and diversity and inclusion in action and being efficient in their performance, especially in under pressure or in pressure situations. And they also have integrity and they're conscious of health and safety, because these are all skills that they have learned.
Absolutely. And Katrina, you work over, do you work with both Beacon Employment Services and Gallatin Mental Health?
So Beacon Employment Services is a program of Gallatin Mental Health.
I love it. I love it. And you definitely spend a lot of time working with folks trying to help them identify good job opportunities for them, do you not?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know we're talking about accommodations, and so some of the more common accommodations that our folks ask of employers would be feedback mediation, which so people who are experiencing like maybe high anxiety or even paranoia can sometimes misinterpret what their bosses are saying to them as anger or like they hate them or that they're after them. So they talk with a vocational specialist what their boss is trying to say and communicate to them, and it's almost like an interpretation, but for both sides, the employer and the employee, learning how to communicate better. And we could either do that with the employer or without the employer's knowledge. Most of the people I work with don't disclose to their employer that they're working with me, but there's definitely some accommodations made behind the scenes there. Another accommodation that we see a lot is just when that anxiety or maybe even like something like auditory hallucinations get too much, to be able to step outside for a minute or two with the agreement from their employer that that's okay.
And do you all over at Beacon Employment Services, do you see people long term then? It's not just you can come for a few months and we'll help you get a handle on it. It's something people can continue doing?
Yep, they could continue doing or continue participating in Beacon Services for as long as they want. So we don't just help people find jobs, we help them keep them as well. We also help people create long-term plans. So it's not just about finding a paycheck, it's about finding a job that's really good match for them long-term. Mm-hmm. So if you're I have a client who is a young person who's just entering the workforce, so you don't get to, like everyone else, just land your dream job.
Yeah, that's true.
You have to kind of work up to that. So he found a job and it's working out really great, but now we're talking about like what those long-term goals are, what that job could lead into. And
I think it's great that we have such long-term services in our community that can continue to help people, because it isn't something that you just need a one-time solution for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, when is actually a good time to ask for an enhancement? You've talked a little bit about what they are and that some of them you don't have to even necessarily ask for.
Actually, there are different stages in the process of getting and keeping a job that you could request an accommodation or an enhancement. Thanks for using that word.
I like to use your words, Michelle. You have good words.
You could do it at application. And most of the people I work with, at least, would prefer that a prospective employer know right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And so we come up with a cover letter, a resume, and then a separate piece of paper that says, I'm requesting these enhancements as I believe that I would be a better employee for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggest that they limit it to just 5.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, if an employer sees a list of a whole bunch of stuff, they're going to drown in all those words anyway. You can ask for an enhancement at the interview, and you can ask for an enhancement when the job is offered, or even after you've been there for a while. But most employee or prospective employees feel that they're more honest,
mm-hmm,
if they just say it right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
There is that fear, like Cindy and Katrina and I have talked about, that the employer won't hire me if I tell them right off the bat. But given a little bit of coaching on dignity and self-esteem, and maybe that employer is not the kind of person you'd want to work for anyway,
mm-hmm,
the job seekers do usually do it at application.
Yeah, but sometimes as you get going in the job, there might be an enhancement that you need that you didn't realize before you could be on the job.
Right, that's right.
And it's always good to ask your employer for that adjustment. But again, like, disclosure is totally up to the person. You might have difficulty concentrating, and telling your employer that you have difficulty concentrating doesn't mean you need your entire medical history of, like, ADHD or something like that. So
mm-hmm,
a lot of times accommodations can be totally informal, and just anybody without a disability would ask for.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so nice as well, because it is one of those things that employers want their employees to be most productive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like you mentioned, whether you have, you know, a diverse ability or not, you're going to want to, I mean, employers are going to appreciate that you're trying to be as productive as you can be.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle, you had mentioned that most of these accommodations cost less than $50. Do you want to talk a little bit about what kind of accommodations there are, and whether they're for the essential functions of a job, or if they're more for just, like, getting to work, or what that looks like?
You hit the nail right on the head. It's all tied to the essential functions of the job. And sometimes that's hard for an employer to weed through. The essential functions of the job are what the job was created for in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You need a waitress.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part of the job description is, and that waitress has to greet and work with the cashier and work with the cleaning up of the floors. The essential functions of that job, the reason it was created, was to be a waitress.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes an employer has to edit down in order to be able to work with the job seeker on the best enhancements for the reason that job exists. But at the same time, the employer does have protections.
Mm-hmm.
In that they don't have to provide an enhancement if it's an undue hardship. Say a person says, I need an elevator.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's thousands,
mm-hmm,
of dollars. If the employer feels that's an undue hardship and goes through the process of trying to come up with other accommodations for that person, and the person still insists they need an elevator, they do not have to provide that.
And at what level is it decided that it's an undue hardship? Is there a cost associated with it, or is it something that the employer would file paperwork with someone, or how does that work?
They would have to go through that process if the job seeker disagreed and went to human rights about it.
Okay.
Then the employer would have to provide that price. There's really no money set on it. In other words, would Boeing be able to provide more than a mom and pop store down on Main Street? Yes, they would. So it's all part and parcel of that process.
Well, and I like that you say that the employer would have to file something, because that does protect the job seeker from, in some ways at least, from discrimination of, well, everything's an undue hardship, even if it was just getting that pencil and paper to the person to organize. Well, you know, I mean, it protects them from that.
Right, and it protects the employer. Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the most important things about this process is the interactive process and the conversations that happen between the employer and the employee. Because although, you know, an employer has a right to pick the least expensive accommodation, but you don't know if it's going to work unless you talk to that individual. So you can say, well, a wheelchair ramp is an accommodation, but that doesn't help me with my disability. So you really need to engage in the interactive process and find out what accommodation is really going to be successful for that person. And you can't do that without their input. You just will never know. I think sometimes people don't engage in that process. That can be where you find that you make an accommodation that you pick and it's not successful, and then you're right back where you started, and then it does get expensive.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember too that just because two people have the same disability doesn't mean that they need the same accommodations.
Right.
What might work for one person might be very triggering to another person.
And if a person wanted to learn more about accommodations, or as Michelle calls them, enhancements, how can they do that? Are there places they can go look for that, or?
There is a website, and it's askjan.org, and it has employee and employer information. Along with that, it also lists several common diverse abilities, and it gives you a list of what might be a workable accommodation. So you'll see things in different price points. So if somebody does ask for an elevator, that's good for the employer and the employee to have that conversation to say, well, would this alternative accommodation work for you? Oh yes, that would. And it's much less expensive. So it gives you a lot of information on what your rights and responsibilities are, both as an employer and as an employee, in regards to accommodations. So, and actually it stands for Job Accommodation Network. And so there's so much information on that website.
And that was askjan.org, is that right?
Yeah, that's what you can go to type in the questions. So.
Well, and I think that's so lovely, because I am not a fan of reinventing the wheel. And if, you know, if somebody else has already said, you know, here are some things that might work for this accommodation, that makes your life a little bit easier and makes the process, whether you're the employee or the potential employee, or whether you're the potential employer, either way, it helps you kind of figure out how one method that might work for you. I like that. And when it comes to these accommodations or enhancements, is it one of those things that's always a physical, tangible thing, like elevators and ramps and pens and paper and that sort of thing?
No, absolutely not. In fact, I think a lot of people get confused too, because people tend to think about visible disabilities, and that's really far from the truth, because there's a lot of disabilities that aren't visible. And so, you know, like an elevator is not going to be an accommodation for somebody necessarily who suffers from depression or has another mental illness. So there's the accommodations that you can provide are as diverse as the abilities.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess you spoke a little bit to that as well, about talking about what you do at Beacon Employment Services with those ongoing services to help people kind of, whether it's decoding what their boss has said to them, or just kind of work through some of the issues they're having at work.
Right.
And is that something that the employer needs to pay for?
No.
Okay.
other part of my job is not just working with clients, but working with employers in the community and developing those relationships, just so that way we know what employers are looking for, so we could best match the employee with the employer, where it's a good work environment for both, for that longevity and just productivity of the job.
Mm-hmm. And is that like an ongoing thing where you're just always looking for employers who are very welcoming to folks who have various diverse abilities? Or is it one of those things that you have a client, for example, who wants to work at a certain place and then you make the relationship?
I go out to the community and attempt to make relationships with several different kinds of employers, because you never know, in the future there might be somebody who would match with that job, and just to find out information about what's available as far as work goes as well. So we have several relationships with employers that we've never placed one person there. So,
but you know, you could if it was a good fit.
Yeah.
And is it just you over there at Beacon Employment Services all by yourself, making communications and helping people?
We have another vocational specialist and also our program manager.
Okay.
Also, there's a really great curriculum called Working Well with a Disability. I think that helps as a guide for people who are seeking employment, and it would even be beneficial for employers. And it explains kind of from beginning to end how to be successful at setting goals related to employment. And so we talk about resources, about, you know, who do you go to talk to about what you have to disclose in your interview, or pretty much anything that's involved with disabilities and employment. And it can be everything from how we dress. So it covers all disability related questions for employment.
And is this something that you do over at Montana Independent Living Project?
We do. We offer that curriculum. And I think that the people that we've had who have gone through that class have, even if they don't leave necessarily with employment, they have all the tools that they need to get it. Mm-hmm. So
the three of you at Job Services, the Montana Independent Living Project, and Beacon Employment Services, do you work together a lot? Do you see some of the same clients? Do you see different clients from each other?
Sometimes we have shared clients. Mm-hmm. I will call Cindy at Montana Independent Living Project, which is a really big mouthful. they actually go by MILP.
I love it.
So I will call Cindy at MILP, or...
Do we call her a MILPer?
She's a MILPer. She's sure.
A MILPer.
That's a good one. I'll take it.
Or... I will call Beacon if a person comes into Job Service that I feel, that we feel would be a better fit for what Beacon can provide for supports for them, or MILP. So we do. We actually collaborate quite often and go to the same meetings. Mm-hmm. Whether they want to see me or not, I'm there again.
Well, and that's one of the things that I love so much, honestly, about this community, all of Gallatin Valley, because I live over in Belgrade, is the fact that everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, but it seems like so many people and organizations are willing to work together. We're not in competition with each other. It isn't my organization is going to have more folks than yours. It's about, you have a program that I know that exists that could really help this person. Let me make sure they get connected. And we're a big enough community that we have some good resources, but a small enough community that we don't have all of them. And so it's kind of nice to be able to get people as much help as they need, whether it's to do with a disability or, you know, anything else, food insecurity, housing, anything going on like that.
I believe all of us have gone to statewide or region-wide or nationwide mm-hmm. meetings where we tell them how we collaborate mm-hmm. and they are just in awe. Well, we have a very unique and positive collaboration here.
Absolutely.
And I think we're really lucky in Gallatin Valley, the amount of resources that we have. And I'm always a bit excited and super proud to be able to share those resources. It doesn't do any good just that when I know what the resources are. Like, we want to encourage people to make choices and to go to whoever they think is going to help them meet their goals. So.
And one thing I wanted to touch on while we're talking about diverse abilities here is, so BridgerCare, which is where I work, is a healthcare setting, of mm-hmm. course. And we about once a year, it comes up that we wonder about service animals. because we do, I mean, this is the Bozeman area, and people love their animals, and we have some people who bring in service animals, some people who bring in pets, and people bring in different things, and that's not something we can allow in a clinic. Not only is it a potential health concern, but it's one of those things where somebody says, you know, this is my emotional support animal. Well, when we're asking people to get undressed and climb up on a bed and may raise strong emotions in them, and you've got a small room and people in it, and you're worried about a dog attacking them, for example. And so once a year at least, we have to have a long conversation about what a service animal is and what's the difference between that and an emotional support animal, what is allowed in, because of course we want people to have what they need to live healthy and well and to be able to receive the services they need. We're also worried, obviously, about safety. So you want to talk about to us about what a service animal is?
I have this wonderful fact sheet, which I will leave for you. And it is from the Disability Rights Montana. A service animal is any animal that is individually trained to provide assistance to an individual who has a disability. Service animals are allowed in all public accommodations, businesses, motels, restaurants, at work, theaters, schools, and more. No proof is required that the animal is certified unless transportation or work. And then you need to provide documentation from a doctor.
Okay.
That says this animal is providing a service. Now, what irritates me, I just put this in, anybody can buy a service animal vest online. Mm-hmm. $50, fits all the dogs. But if a dog defecates, urinates, uncontrollably barks, bites, fights, or is out of control, whether that dog has a service vest on or not, they can be asked to leave. Mm-hmm. And I've had people tell me, well, this is my emotional support dog. Mm-hmm. This is my comfort dog. Mm-hmm. And yes, I believe in that. I have my own little Yorkie. Mm-hmm. That is my comfort dog. Many people need emotional support and comfort animals, but they are not a service animal. Mm-hmm. And they can be asked to leave. In hotels, motels, and housing, the hotels cannot require you to pay an additional fee for a service animal. And when you're applying for housing, emotional support, comfort dogs, and service dogs are all allowed.
Okay. Without an additional fee, you're saying? Because I know those pet deposits can be steep.
Right. When you're going on an airplane or a bus, they can require you to bring that doctor slip.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're asking for your service animal to be with you at work, the employer can ask for that doctor's slip.
And will most service animals be wearing a vest? Most ones that are actually have been trained? Have their owners been told?
They must have. Mm-hmm. They must have a service vest on.
Okay.
But one thing that's interesting is that you don't have to have that dog professionally trained. You can tell people that that dog is being trained by you.
Is there any sort of test they have to pass if you've trained it to do something specific?
No, it depends on the severity.
Okay.
If you have a dog who is supposed to smell from you that you might be going into a diabetic situation, then there's more professional training that needs to be done there. In the state of Montana, interestingly enough, the only two animals that can be a service animal is a dog and a miniature pony.
Oh, that's right. I feel like I've seen one of those before.
Yeah. Some people say, I have a service cat. Well, I think that's wonderful, but you don't have to allow them.
Okay.
In.
That's fair. So you talked a little bit about emotional support animals as well, and when we talk about diverse abilities, you mentioned that it's can be all kinds of different things. Is it possible that somebody with an emotional support animal could get that animal certified to be a service animal?
Yes, it all comes down to your conversation with your doctor.
Okay. Yeah. And any doctor, any general, or is there specific doctors that you need to see?
No, psychologist, psychiatrist. It needs to be a doctor.
We need to be a mental health professional.
Yeah, can't be an RN. And you can never ask the person, what is your disability? Mm-hmm. Never mm-hmm. ask that.
Mm-hmm. It would have to be a service beyond emotional support, though.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing to keep in mind with housing and emotional support animals is that they're only required to let one animal live with you unless the second animal provides a second service.
That's fair. Right.
So you could have six service animals as long as each animal is performing one task mm-hmm. to address one diverse ability.
Right, but you can't have three emotional support cats.
That's how many it takes, though. I don't know.
That is herding cats.
That's true. Cats are snotty sometimes. You need to have a few in reserve for when you really need a cuddle.
And I think a good rule of thumb, too, is to just keep in mind that service animal is the same as the person. Like, they're one unit. They're together. So just in the same way that you wouldn't tell somebody who is coming into your business who's in a wheelchair, you have to leave your wheelchair outside. If you look at it that way, a service animal is an essential tool that person needs to participate in their community and transportation. So yeah, I think that it's pretty devastating for somebody who legitimately has a service animal and wants to access their community, and somebody maybe because of lack of education doesn't allow that to happen. Mm-hmm. Pretty devastating for that individual. So I think it's pretty apparent when it's a service animal because they are performing a function. Mm-hmm. And if the dog's running all over the place and pooing and peeing everywhere, it's probably not a service animal.
Absolutely. And just to do a little plug, because I did know someone in grad school that had a service dog, and she would get very upset that people would just come up and pet the puppy. And here in Bozeman especially, we love our animals and we love to pet them all. And I'm trying to teach my 2-year-old, we never touch somebody's animal without asking, no matter whose the animal is. But is that something that you should definitely keep in mind when you see an animal in a support vest?
Yeah, and a lot of times it'll say on the vest, do not pet this animal. And so it's kind of like if you're at your desk working and somebody comes up and pets you, it's like, you know, like, I'm working. I'm at work right now. Please don't pet me. So it is hard, though, because Montana, we do love our dogs. And you see a dog and you're like, oh, that's so cute. But that dog is not functioning as a pet. It's functioning as an actual tool. So.
And just one more thing I want to say about that. They don't necessarily spend their whole lives as service animals. Is that correct? At some point in time, they are retired?
Well, not only are they retired, but when they take their vest off,
mm-hmm.
then they can just be a big kid if they want to be.
Yep.
But when that vest is on, hands off.
Yep. That's a good point. I like that. Well, we only have a few minutes left, so I wondered if y'all wanted to just kind of have any last minute things you wanted to say about what we talked today, or I love morals of the story. What was the moral of the story today? Mm-hmm.
I think for me, the moral of the story is whether you're an employer or an employer, what do we want our community to look like? And I think that by not providing opportunities for people with disabilities, we're not an inclusive community. And for most people I know, that's really important. Mm-hmm. We want diversity, we want to be inclusive. We need employees and we need employers. And so it's a relationship that fits really well together, and why would you limit that for any reason? And it's not different, or it's not like, oh, I'm such a great owner of a business because I hired somebody with a disability. It's a relationship where there's give and take from that, just like any other employee-employee relationship. And I can't imagine, just from the businesses that I go to and the people that I meet in this community. I can't imagine what our community would look like without those people in it. It can make a really annoying trip to the grocery store at 5 o'clock mm-hmm. in Bozeman be an experience for me, where I'm interacting with my community and people that I've developed relationships with. And I could be standing in the line and I at the store and I could be in a bad mood, or I can see somebody that I've come to really value who has great customer service and really makes that trip an experience for me. So there are a lot of benefits to hiring people with disabilities. I forgot what else I was going to say. So.
And I think just like thinking about employment in general, whether you have a disability or not, it's what we do with our time, it's how we contribute to our community. And that goes for anyone, whether you have a disability or not. And so when you're not part of that workforce, of how that affects you as a person, with less confidence and obviously less income.
Well, you're just left out. Did I prompt you? I'm sorry. What I think it is it boils down to dignity.
Yeah.
And everybody has the right to dignity.
Yeah, even the dignity to fail. Like, we all fail, and like failing is part of life, and that's how we learn and grow. So if you like protect a person with a disability from failing, you're really denying them dignity.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I think that sums it up pretty well. I really enjoyed talking with the three of you today, Katrina, Michelle, and Cindy, about folks with disabilities and how to make sure that they are connected to unemployment and how it can really benefit the employer to make sure that we are hiring inclusively in that way. And thank you so much, Cindy, for letting us know about the AskJan.org website, which both employees and employers can go to find out about various accommodations for people with different types of disabilities, because as you told us, Michelle, there's a wide variety of them. So thank you so much to KGVM, and we will catch you all next time with the Community Action League. Bye now.
Thank you.
Yeah.